Welcome back to The Green. I'm Tom Byrne. In the 70s and 80s, Rehoboth Beach was a summer getaway for many gay men who worked in nearby cities and towns like Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and even rural Pennsylvania. Some say that at the time, Rehoboth was one of the few places where they could truly be themselves. In the first of this month's two-part History Matters, our Anne Hoffman brings us an oral history of that community's roots in Rehoboth. In part two next week, we'll examine how that history served as the foundation for efforts to establish equal rights for the LGBT community in the first state. But in this week's piece, you'll hear the voices of Steve Elkins, Max Dick, and Bob Hoffer from Camp Rehoboth, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. The camp in Camp Rehoboth stands for Create a More Positive Rehoboth.
It was pretty amazing. You would drive through on Route 50 and get to Annapolis. Oh my God, am I ever going to get there? And hit the Bay Bridge. And then the relief. It was almost as if it was a weather phenomenon that would take over. The relief that would come over your body and say, I'm on my way to the beach where I can be me.
It was like the highlight of our year. You know, we would go to Rehoboth a lot, and we'd also go to New York City a lot.
And we would drive into town, and all you wanted to do was unload the car, have a beer, and just say, thank God I'm here.
I was an elementary teacher for 35 years in a small town of Phillipsburg, and I had to be very careful about my sexuality. And I just felt more comfortable that I could really be myself down here.
We grew up in a time where you didn't just go around, especially starting in high school, like some of the kids are doing today, and coming out as gay. That was unheard of.
The gay area was south of what's now we call Poodle Beach. We'd have to go across the Carpenter Beach, the DuPont area, into a no man's land, and that's where we all would pitch our chairs and have our time to sun and have a good time.
Used to be, of course, everybody had to have the obligatory rainbow umbrella and the rainbow towel, but that's starting to get passé now.
This would be our routine. We would go down there, stake out our place, sit down, and I would say to Max and our friends, I said, okay, where do you want to eat tonight? First, dinner. So we would decide, and then, this is way before cell phones, I would have to walk back up on the boardwalk, call and make a reservation, but that was always first priority. Then we knew how long we could stay on the beach and then go home, take our little nap, and go out for cocktails.
In the 70s especially was house parties. People whose neighbors just sort of winked and turned their head and gave a different eye toward what was going on next door. First year we had a madras party, which we painted the entire house. We had a fence in the back that with canvas with madras patterns that we did with a maze to get into it. Madras was the cocktail at the time, which was vodka and orange juice and cranberry, I think. The next year was an aquamarine and tangerine party where we repainted the house. It was the first year that I know of any house. We had our own business cards printed up. We had our own t-shirts for the boys of 24 Christian Street. A lot of people have gone on to do that since, but I think we were probably the first people ever to do that, and that was in 1983.
We'd go out to the old Renegade,
which was a big dance club with an outside area, and that's where we'd go, and we'd dance till 2 or 3 in the morning.
It was like the place to go, and it wasn't just during the summer, but it was year-round. You would go out there. There was a cover charge, of course, but you just danced the night away.
Flashing lights, and then every once in a while the fog machine would come on, and then they would have boxes where people would get up on top of the box, and they'd be dancing.
It was a place to meet other guys. Whereas today, we have social media, we have Grindr, and people are always on their phone. They don't have to go out to, you know, find someone to go home with. Where back then, that's what a lot of people did. They went out to have fun and maybe find someone and take them home that night. I never remember being there that there were fights that broke out. I think everyone was just so happy to be there and have fun. Were there drugs going on? I'm sure there were.
If Federal health officials consider it an epidemic, yet you rarely hear a thing about it. At first, it seemed to strike only one segment of the population. Now, Barry Peterson tells us, this is no longer the case.
I was looking at a photograph earlier. It's hanging in Lionel Murray's apartment. It's a photograph that from people that we shared a beach house with, that there were nine of us in the photograph, and four of them are dead from HIV and AIDS.
Camp Rehoboth, every December the 1st, they have the AIDS Day, where they have a remembrance service. And we march down the street from the pavilion and end up at All Saints Church. And at that time, they read name after name after name of those who have passed away, that either somebody down here knows, or lived here, or visited here. People are holding a battery candle, and whenever a name is read that they know, they'll raise it up in the air.
Starting in 94, 94, 95, 96, we had a funeral almost every weekend for somebody that was dying of AIDS. And I'm very fortunate that my husband Murray and I met in 1978, and it saved our lives. And to stand in a church and eulogize these friends was a turning point and pointed our lives where we said we have to do something. So Camp Rehoboth subsequently has one of the major contracts with the state of Delaware, the Division of Public Health, in educating people. And I think last year we gave away 70,000 condoms. It wasn't until the early 1990s when we finally said, we're going to put a face on this. No question there were a lot of gay people here before that. But in 1993, there was a horrendous gay bashing. There were four men mostly from Virginia Beach. And they'd all been out on a Saturday night. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. They were two standing on the south end of the boardwalk, when some young men from Lincoln, Delaware, came in town looking for a party. When they couldn't find the party, one of them said, I got an idea, let's go to the south end of the boardwalk and beat up some faggots. One of them had the nylon sleeve, it had a Little League baseball bat in it, the aluminum baseball bat. He pulled it out and hit one of the gay men up beside the head. Another one had reached into a trash can and found a champagne bottle and hit another gay man upside the head. One of the men we thought would never be able to walk again. We had a chief of police at the time, Craig Doyle, who said, we may not have hate crime legislation in Delaware, but this is a hate crime, and I'm going to approach it as if it is. Then Governor Carper, Tom Carper, who's now our U.S. Senator, stood on the steps or on the lawn of the police station in Rehoboth and signed hate crimes legislation that added sexual orientation, and he invited me to sit at the table. The community of Rehoboth said, we're not going to take this anymore.
And it used to be we had to go to what would be, quote, a gay bar to feel comfortable. But now, I mean, like, one of our favorite places to go to in town now is the Purple Parrot, which gets a completely diverse crowd. And we've been there for some New Year's Eves, where on the dance floor you have, same-sex couples, opposite-sex couples.
I don't think about it at all anymore. And, you know, I am who I am. And I have a loving husband. We've been together, as I said, for 35 years, got married in 2012. If we went back home right now and I saw an old friend, I'd say, oh, by the way, this is my husband. I'm at the point in my life now of being accepted to myself, that if someone doesn't like it, that's fine. That's their opinion, and you don't have to be my friend.
Our thanks to Ann Hoffman for producing that piece, and Steve Elkins, Max Dick, and Bob Hoffer of Camp Rehoboth for providing their stories and insight. Again, we'll have the second half of this two-part History Matters next week when Kathy Carter looks at how this history served as the foundation for efforts to deliver equal rights to the LGBT community in the first state. Stay with us. The Green continues in a moment with our arts playlist, where we'll learn about an upcoming documentary on the Kalmar Nickel. This is Delaware Public Media.